Okay, it's 10 past by this clock, so time to make a start. So this is the introductory lecture for Informatics 2A. So if you've come here looking for ancient Sanskrit or Antarctic studies or anything like that, now would be a good time to leave. So giving a lecture is quite a complicated business these days. So could I first of all check, can you hear me at the back? Okay, encouraging nods, that's good. And also, is this level of lighting kind of about right? You can see the screen clearly, but you're not in too much danger of falling asleep. That'd be great. Okay, so my name's John Longley, and this is really the introductory lecture, most of which is devoted to just covering the general arrangements for the course and things like that. So let me start with just a little bit on, give you a flavour of what this course is about. So the official full title of this course is Informatics 2A, colon, Processing Formal and Natural Languages. Okay. So really, the course is about languages and two kinds of languages we have there. So formal languages, for the purpose of this course, mostly means computer languages, things like Java and Haskell and HTML and things like that. And also natural languages, which are human languages that actual real people speak. So things like English or Japanese or what have you. And so it's about processing those languages. So the basic problem we have in mind is something like this. So you know when you write a program in Java or something like that, you're used to typing in some stuff at the terminal. You type in some text. Then you compile it and run it, and then the computer actually does something, it produces some behavior corresponding to what you told it to do. So the problem we're interested in is what has to happen inside the computer in order for the computer to understand the program you typed in and make it actually do something. How does it process the text you type in and turn that into the magic of actual program behavior? Or likewise, if we were thinking about human languages, you might ask, what would we need to do for a computer to, in some sense, be able to process or partially understand a human language like English and perhaps interact with human users in their own native language? And also, what is it we need to know about the structure of languages, the structure of computer languages, and the structure of human languages in order to make all that stuff happen? So that's the basic problem we're addressing in this course on processing formal and natural languages. Now, I think this is a great course because it brings together these two, in a way, quite distinct disciplines, the study of artificial languages, computer languages, and the study of natural human languages. And what I think is especially interesting is that a lot of the same ideas, a lot of the same underlying theory, is common to both those things. So we'll be looking at some common theoretical ideas that can be used to talk about and to describe and to process both computer languages and human languages. But we'll also be looking at some of the important differences there are between those kinds of languages. So that's all I want to say just now about the actual content of the course. So the second lecture will be a more detailed overview of the intellectual substance of the course and what go into a bit more detail on what the course is about. Today's lecture, I'm afraid, is mainly the admin stuff we have to get through. Hopefully, it won't take me the whole lecture to get through the admin stuff, and I'll be able to make a start on the material of lecture two before the end of the lecture, so to give you some of the flavour of what the course is about. Okay. So first of all, let me tell you about some people who are on the course. So so my name's John Longley, as I've mentioned. I'll be lecturing half the course. The other half of the course will be lectured by Mirella Lapata, who's just here. Would you like to stand up? Stand up. Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah. Anything else you'd like to say? Okay. So roughly speaking, I'm a researcher in the theory of computer languages, and Mirella is a researcher in natural language processing. So roughly speaking, I'll be talking about the formal language half of the course, and Mirella will be doing the natural language half of the course. although we will be emphasizing the connections between them quite a lot. So that's something we're both very enthusiastic about. Another person whose name you need to know is the overall year organizer for Informatics 2. This is all second year informatics courses, not just this one. So Guido Sanguinetti. He's a person you need to know because should you need to apply for a deadline extension to a piece of coursework, this is the guy you should email about that, not us, okay? So he's that's a person you need to know. So the course secretary, Kendall Reed, in the ITO, she'll be taking care of things like your allocation to tutorial groups and things like that. So if you have any problems on that side of things, you can contact her. And we also have a teaching assistant, Christos Christodoulopoulos. Would you like to stand up? Did I say your name right? Right, okay. So Christos is a PhD student here, a research student in natural language processing. And he'll be doing some work behind the scenes on the technical side of the course, getting the tutorial materials, the assignment materials all together and in good shape. And he's also someone you can go and ask for help on course materials. So these are some important people. Right, communication mechanisms. So the central source of information for the course is the website, the URL, which is listed here. You can probably find it just by chasing links from the university homepage. But you should visit that and bookmark it now, because that's the main anchor point. So everything, lecture slides, assignment materials, announcements, everything else will be linked to off that. So that's the central thing. For important administrative announcements as we go along, there'll be occasional emailings to the Inf2A students' mailing lists. So that's for sort of administrative things. For more technical things, if you want for actual discussion, and if you've got questions on the course material you want to raise, questions on I don't understand this or that in the lecture slides or something like that, there's a web-based discussion forum I've set up. There's another slide about that later, so I won't say that now. And we'll also be, later in this lecture, appointing some course reps who will be a small select group of people from among you who can channel feedback from you guys to the teaching staff on any aspects of the content or delivery of the course. So you might like to be thinking about whether you'd like to volunteer to be a course rep, which isn't a very big job, but come back to that later. Okay, so it's your responsibility to check especially your own email and the course website to stay in touch with what's going on. Okay. So I thought I'd better say a bit about what the bottom line is in terms of what's expected from you, what you have to do to pass the course and things like that. Firstly, there's a prerequisite for taking this course. So in order to be officially allowed to do this course, you're supposed to have passed all first-year informatics courses, unless that is you happen to be a visiting student, in which case you're excused that. So if this isn't the case for you, or if it's not in hand already that you're retaking any Inf1 courses that you failed, then you need to talk to your director of studies about that. What you need to do to pass the course, well, course will be assessed 75% on the exam, which will happen in December, and 25% on the coursework. And so for a pass, you need to achieve all of the following three things. So you need to achieve at least 40% as your total mark. That's the weighted sum of your exam and coursework marks according to those proportions there. You need to achieve at least 35% in the exam. So if you just got 34% in the exam and 100% on the coursework, that wouldn't be good enough. And you also need to get at least 25% on the assessed coursework. So if you've got 100% in the exam and 24% on the coursework, it's a bit hard to imagine, but you might. that would also not be a pass. Okay, so that's passing the course. There's also, most of you will be doing informatics-based degrees, so in order to be allowed to progress to honours in the third year of your degree programme, you need to do better than just pass this course. You need to pass it with at least 50%. And you need to do that not only on this course, but all of the informatics courses you're taking this year. And you need to pass at least 50% on the first attempt. That means basically on the December exam, not on the resit. Okay. Of course, if you're ill on the December exam, and there are circumstances that can be taken into account, then that won't be counted as your first attempt. But basically, you have to pass it with 50% on the first valid attempt. That's to be assured of a progression to honours degree. In practice, if you just miss the hurdle on one of your courses, there may be some leniency there. But this is what you should aim for, because this is what you need to achieve for it to be guaranteed that you can progress to honours. Okay. A bit about the exam. The exam will happen in December, typically about a couple of weeks after the end of the course lectures. There is a resit the following August. We don't know the dates or times or places yet. They're set centrally by registry, not by us. But we will let you know, we'll publicise it once the dates are announced. Just to give you a rough idea of what you'll be expected to do, it'll be a pen and paper exam, so not a programming electronic exam. It'll be 2 hours, and it'll be in two halves. The first half will be multiple choice questions, compulsory ones, and then the second half will be a choice of 2 out of 3 longer questions. So that's the format. The exam, as I said, takes 75% of the credit for the course. But there's also the assessed coursework assignments. And there'll be two of these for this course. They're rather weighted towards the latter half of the course in order to give us time to cover a decent amount of material. So I think the first assignment, it's not around week seven, I think, until it's due in. So it'll be issued that day. You've got 2 weeks to do it, and there'll be a due date 4 o'clock on the afternoon of Monday the 7th of November. And likewise for assignment two, and that'll be very close to the end of term, the due date for that. They're both electronic kind of programming style assignments. Right, okay, so you'll do them on the computer, you'll submit them online, we'll tell you how to do that. And what we, for our part, commit ourselves to do is to mark and return these assignments within 2 weeks of the submission. Okay. Okay, so now I'm afraid we have to go through the statutory moan about plagiarism, because it does affect coursework for this course as it does for any other. Okay, so any form of copying on assessed work we do treat as a very serious offence. There's a whole escalating mechanism of disciplinary action that can be taken if it's found that you are plagiarising. So, and I'd say for the work on this course, because it's code you'll be writing, so the thing that you absolutely must not do, you can discuss the general ideas of the programming languages you're using and the ideas behind what you're trying to do and things like that, but sharing of actual snippets of code, however small, right, even if it's sort of one line of code, whether that's shared by email or by looking over someone's shoulder on the terminal, actual sharing of code is absolutely out. Okay, so make sure you're not guilty and take reasonable precautions to protect other people, to stop other people from spying on your work as well. And there's a few more websites there you can check out if you want further clarification on what the university's position on plagiarism is. Okay. So that's about what you basically have to do to pass the course. So let's now talk about the actual activities that will happen during the running of the course. So first of all, there are lectures. So congratulations on finding your way to this one. So you are the people I don't need to tell that lectures will be in Appleton Tower Lecture Theatre 5 at 4:10 on Tuesdays, Thursdays and Fridays. Okay, so the slides that are given at lectures will appear on the course website. So if you visit the website, you'll find there's a list of lectures and there's links to the slides for the various lectures. And each link will become live. We guarantee that each link will become live immediately after, or possibly even just before, the lecture in question. Okay, so if you try clicking on later ones now, you'll find they're broken links, but they'll become live as we go along. So for instance, these slides that I'm now showing you are currently up on the web page, and you can find these and consult them there. Okay, so we undertake to put all our lecture slides on the web accessibly. Printed copies of lecture slides. So I have a question to put to you as to whether you'd like me to have photocopied copies of the slides to actually give out as at lectures. So the issue is, we want to save on wastage, we want to save money, we want to be kind to the environment, things like that. You can always print them out off yourself from the website, but the cost of printing off a single copy for yourself is, I believe, about three or four times the cost of a photocopy produced as a batch. So my question to you is, if I didn't have copies here of the lecture slides to hand out, do you think you would, in general, whether before or after the lecture at any time, if you weren't given copies, would you print off your own? Could you raise a hand if you think you would? For most lectures, you would, at some stage between now and the end of the course, print off your own. Okay, so a few people would. Who's pretty sure they typically wouldn't? Oh, okay. So does that mean you just read them on the screen? Right. Okay. I think we'll go with that then. So I won't do handouts. If you're one of the people who does like to have printed copies, you can print them. But okay. So I won't generally produce handouts. But if you want to revisit that later in the course, then you can tell us. But okay, I'll take it for the position now that we will be an eco-friendly course and not have printed handouts, unless you later ask for them. So okay, good. That's one less job for us to do. There will also be tutorials. Now, it's basically a similar system to what you're used to from first year. So this is now week one we're in. We're now in week one of lectures. And tutorials, for this course at least, won't start until week three, okay? So we'll have all of week two's lectures to give us a decent amount of material to start having tutorials on. So tutorial one occurs in week three. Tutorial two occurs in week four, and so on. Okay, and so the way it'll work is that each tutorial will be roughly going over the material in your tutor groups, going over the material covered in the previous week's lectures. Okay, so that'll mean that even if your tutor group happens to be on a Monday, you will, by the time of your tutor group, have covered in lectures all the material that the sheet's about. Okay. So a tutorial sheet with problems for discussion at each tutorial will be made available on the Friday of the week before the week of the tutorial itself. Okay, so the first tutorial, which is in week three, the sheet for that will be issued Friday of week two, which is Friday of next week, and so on. For those, I will print handouts, okay, and I'll bring them along to the lecture and you can pick them up there, okay. But also they will be on the website, so if you don't make it to the lecture, you'll be able to get them anyway. Okay, so you're right. So the idea is that will give you time to go over to attempt the problems at the on the tutorial sheet, so that you'll be able to participate contribute to the discussion in your tutor group. Okay. So Kendall, the course secretary, will very soon be sending out an email advertising the preliminary allocation we've made of you to your tutor groups, okay? So in some cases, you might have been allocated to a group at a time that's not possible for you because you're doing some other course. So if so, the way it works is if you reply to Kendall's email, if you email her and suggest some tutorial groups you could make, then she'll reallocate you. And she's asked me as well to ask, if you happen to change tutorial groups for any other reason, you know, sometimes people just do it just because to stay with their friend or something like that, please do let Kendall know if you change groups for any reason so that we know who's in what tutorial group. That will be great. Okay? Now, we are trying to be a bit more strict this year than in previous years about tutorial attendance. So the rules are, if you miss two tutorials in a row, okay, your tutor will have taken note of that fact, and your DOS will be notified. And who knows where that will lead. So come to tutorial groups. It's much more of the course if you do engage with this process. It's much better for everyone. Okay? Now, there's another kind of thread of the course that will be happening in parallel with the lecture material, and that is you'll be expected to pick up another programming language, and it's a programming language called Python, which is a language that's used quite a lot in the area of natural language processing. Now, last year you got taught programming languages in lectures, yeah? Haskell, is it? And Java, you know, a bit of those sorts of things. So now that you're second years, it's kind of taken as read that picking up a new programming language isn't supposed to be a big deal for you now. You can learn new programming languages. So there's sheets on worksheets online that are there that you can work through by yourself in order to familiarize yourself with Python. There are also some lab sessions which are set up with demonstrators who are able to provide individual help if you need help with learning Python. But the Python language itself won't be covered in lectures. Okay, we've got other stuff to do. So that's the thing you're expected to teach yourself. And you need it because it features crucially in the coursework assignments. So you'll be learning about Python and also a package of utilities operated from within Python called the Natural Language Toolkit, which does a variety of interesting natural language processing tasks. So that's, again, this process starts in week three, really, in terms of the lab sessions. So, I mean, you're welcome to make a start on having a go at the Python worksheets before then, but you can treat it as a, on the website site there, there's a sheet for each of weeks 3, 4, 5, and 6, so that gives you an indication of the speed at which you're supposed to be able to work through them. Class reps, oh yes, okay. So we need some volunteers, right, to serve as class reps for the course. So a class rep is someone who's there, they're sort of really there to protect us lecturers from getting complaints simultaneously from 100 students, right? Okay, so if there are issues, there are things you want to complain about, you can sort of vent your fury on the class reps. That's the idea. Or at least moan. You can moan to the class reps about us, and the class reps can discuss that amongst themselves and think about what's a tactful and diplomatic way to put your points to us so that we don't get sort of flamed continually. So that's the mechanism. If you're a class rep, so class reps are appointed separately for each Inf2 course you're doing, and you can be a class rep for more than one course if you're keen. So the job basically involves keeping an ear close to the ground for sort of murmurings of discontent in the ranks. There's one staff student liaison meeting specifically for this course, which will happen roughly in the middle of term, which you'll be asked to attend to sort of discuss things. And there may be also other more informatics-wide liaison meetings that you're invited to. And in any case, your name will be given to the Students Association, who will issue with guidance on how to be a class rep Okay. So, would anyone like to volunteer for this? Anyone like to be community spirited and? Right. So how many have we got? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's exactly the number we need, and that's a good mix of men and women. So, great. Thanks, guys. That's brilliant. If I could ask you guys to just come forward at the end of the lecture and give me your name and email address on a sheet of paper, then I'll put your names up on the website, and then other students can at any point email you. Okay, that was nice and easy. Right. Excuse me just a second. So today's lecture is sponsored by Schweppes, and I can thoroughly recommend this. Yeah. Right, okay, I've set up a web-based, this seems to be the thing to do these days. I've set up a web-based discussion forum. This is linked to from the Inf2A homepage. This is a forum where you can post questions on things you don't understand in terms of the content of the course material, you know, things on the lecture slides you don't understand, aspects of Python you don't understand, things like that. You can, and you're free to answer one another's questions, or failing that, Christos or Marilla or myself will contribute and hopefully help you out. So you're encouraged to use this as a basic forum for discussing technical matters. Of course, you mustn't post anything like a solution to a problem, an assignment or tutorial question here. So if you follow the link that's there from the main Inf2A homepage, you click on subscribe, and then you'll see a message from me, a sort of welcome message, which explains what you have to do next in order to be able to actually post to it. Okay? So I'd encourage you to do that, and it would be nice if, as soon as you feel the urge, you actually start posting questions and things, and getting some discussion going. So that's a resource that's available. Okay, textbooks and the like. I've got some here. Okay, so we've. Marilla and I have talked about this, and we think that you should consider it reasonable to fork out for at least one textbook for the course. And we think that if you buy just one textbook for the course, it should be this one, Jurafsky and Martin, book on speech and language processing, and make sure it's the second edition. Okay. Now this is a wonderful, rich book. It's obviously it's on the natural language side of the course rather than formal language side. It's got far more in it than we'll cover in this course, but it'll be a great resource for later courses that you might go on to in third and fourth year courses on the natural language processing side. It's a fun book. It's written in a very lively, fun style. It's good to dip into. The thing about natural languages is everyone starts off knowing at least their own native language. I presume you're all pretty reasonable at English. So that gives you a sort of point of entry into reading stuff about natural language processing. So I've had great fun even just browsing this book when I've been supposed to be doing other things. So I do recommend it. Obviously, it doesn't. It will cover a little bit on the formal language side, but not. It won't cover everything that's in the in this course. So, if you want a text on the formal language side, the one we recommend is Dexter Kosen, Automata and Computability. So that's got a nice hardback version of it here. I would say this one, it's quite formal and mathematical in style. So, if you're someone who's kind of comfortable with that. You want to know the real truth about stuff, okay? Then that's a good one to read. It's rather formal mathematical style might not suit everyone, but it'll suit some of you.
And on the Python side of things, there's a good text on Python, and this is actually available online as a book, so you don't really so much need to buy this.
And other relevant bits of reading will be kind of pointed out to you as the course goes along. But would strongly recommend considering getting Jurafsky and Martin. You can get it on Amazon for, I think it's about £30 or something. But look how many pages it's got. Now, it really is super book. Quite pretty recent as well, pretty 2009, this edition. So it's pretty much cutting edge stuff on language processing. So good stuff. Right. Lectures are actually being videoed this year. In fact, I'm told that the audiovisual staff at the university have set things up so that all the IMF2A lectures are automatically being videoed. So in fact, we're on video right now. So hello, if you're watching this at home. eventually, they'll tell us where the video files are going to appear on the web. And so quite soon, we hope we'll be able to actually provide links to them from the website. Okay, so that's something we didn't manage to do last year. So something's available. I'm not totally sure I'm looking forward to seeing myself on video, but never mind. And another piece of technology is we're hoping to make use of these little handheld devices, which you might have come across, officially called personal response systems, but also known as clickers. So have you come, do you know what clickers are? Yes. You all know what clickers are, okay. Okay. Yeah, have you used them before in other classes? You have. In first year?
Yes.
Yeah, well, must have been, yeah.
Who hasn't used them? Can we see who hasn't?
Who hasn't used them, yeah. Okay, and who has used them? Okay, about half and half. Okay. So it's possible for you to pick up a clicker from the main library in George Square. Okay. You can loan it for free, and the same clicker will work on all the courses you attend, so you don't need different clickers for different courses, anything silly like that. The idea is it's supposed to help make lecturers a bit more interactive. So at some point in the lecture, we might put up a multiple choice question. Okay, I'll give you a few minutes to think about the answer, then you can click on what you think the answer is, and a sort of voting system will appear. We'll be able to see from this whether most of you have got the right answer or not. So just as an example, how it might work, there might be a question like this. Where are clickers available for loan? One, the main library. Two, somewhere else. So you click on one or two, depending on what you think's the right answer, and the voting scores will appear there. So we'll try and get that, get into the habit of using them sort of fairly soon in the next few lectures. Hopefully that's a way of making the lectures more interactive. Okay, so getting towards the end now. So just a summary of what you should do, who's the person you should contact if you find you're needing help with various things. So first of all, if you're suffering from adverse personal circumstances of any kind that you think may be affecting your work, not only on this course but any other course, then it's your director of studies you should get in touch with to have a chat about that and see what arrangements might be able to be made to make things easier for you. If perhaps as a result of such personal circumstances you decide, or you and your DOS decide, that a good course of action would be to ask for an extension to a coursework deadline, then, as I said earlier, it's the year organiser, Guido Sanguinetti, who you should contact to ask for that. Not Morella and myself. Okay, he's the one who has the authority to grant extensions. Other than in exceptional cases, extensions will only be granted if you've actually asked for one in advance of the coursework deadline. And the further in advance of it you can ask, you're able to ask, the better your chances will be of getting one.
if you're having difficulties actually understanding the course material, so you can talk to your friends about it. Talk to one another. Ask your tutor. Your tutor is probably, other than that, your tutor is probably the first port of call. Do ask questions in tutorials to seek help. If that doesn't help, if you're still flummoxed, you can try getting in touch with Christos. And both Christos and Mirella and myself, as I said on an earlier slide, we have an office hour for the course, okay, which is a time when you can come and you're free to come and see us without making an appointment with us in advance. So I think my office, it was on the slides earlier. You can look it up. And if you have complaints or issues with the way the course is run or anything like that, it's one of the class reps who've kindly volunteered that we should be, that you should be getting in touch with. Okay. So I do hope you enjoy the course. Like I say, Mirella and I think it's a fantastic course. We're really excited and enthused about the material. So I will just have time now to make a brief start on Lecture 2, which is the overview and a roadmap of the actual intellectual content of the course. But I should pause here to ask if anyone has any questions on the administrative stuff or the running of the course. Is there anything you can think of that I forgot to say?
No, do you guys not have any questions? Don't be shy. Everything was clear?
It's good? Brilliant. Okay, well, I'll...
go and collect the clickers. So we'll start using them, and I don't want people that, you know, we want to see the barges going up and down. And it's kind of important, and don't forget them at home. Bring them in every lecture, because we want to announce when we are doing the clickers. Because there are
Yeah, okay, thanks. Right, okay, you can chat among yourselves for 1 minute or so whilst I just change over stuff for the next lecture. Okay, so welcome to Lecture 2. Welcome back after the break. I'll just kind of make a start on the first few slides of this lecture now. We'll go over them again quickly on Thursday when we give this lecture officially, but hopefully by making a start now we'll save a bit of time. So I'll be doing most of this lecture, and then Mirella will be taking over for the bit that's about her parts of the course. So this lecture is supposed to give you a general overview and roadmap of the actual content of the course, the actual material we're going to be covering. And this slide here is an overview of the overview. So this is what's going to be in this lecture. So some stuff on what Inf2A is actually all about, and then the sort of structure of the topics we'll be covering. Okay, so let's see. So as I said earlier, this course is about methods for describing, specifying, and processing various kinds of languages. And as I said, we're interested in both formal languages, computer languages. Now, when one talks about computer languages, the first thing people think of is programming languages. Like Java and Haskell, things like that. But there are actually, once you start thinking about it, there are an awful lot of other kinds of computer languages in the world that aren't programming languages as such. So, for example, there's HTML, which is the language like what web pages are written in. Okay, so it's not just when you run programs like Java programs, but anytime you fetch a web page into your web browser, okay, there's an HTML file that gets sucked in, and the web browser has to do some kind of language processing in order to know what to display on the screen. Okay, and then SQL or SQL, that's a database query language, so anytime anything happens that involves a query to a database, the query will be expressed in some kind of language, and some kind of language processing will need to happen in order for the database to know what to do with that query. So there's languages, there's computer languages for humans to communicate with machines, and there's other computer languages for machines to communicate with each other. So, yeah, basic idea is language processing is happening everywhere all the time in whenever there are computers doing things. So language processing is a significant part of computer science as a whole. But we're also talking about natural languages, languages that people speak, languages like English or Greek or Japanese. So that's the second kind of language. And those are the main two that we'll be looking at. But it's also worth mentioning that there's a third kind of thing we'll be looking at that could be regarded as a kind of language because it's covered by the same set of ideas of the course. So this is something you will have got a flavour of already in Informatics 1A, I think, when you looked at little state machines modelling behaviour of systems like vending machines and things like that. So if you think about a machine like a vending machine, there's various actions you can perform on it or it can perform. So, you know, you can insert a 50p piece, that's one action, then you can press a button, and then it can perform an action, which is hopefully delivering you a Mars bar, okay? So if you think about that sequence of actions, you can think of that sequence of actions as a possible or a legal, that's an allowable behavior for that machine, okay? But what's not an allowable behavior for that machine is for it to deliver a Mars bar before you've put in any money or anything like that. So if you reverse the order of these three actions, you'd get something that's not a possible behavior of the machine. So you can think broadly of this a set of possible sequences of actions that the machine can perform as kind of like the language that the machine speaks. Okay? You're kind of in a very general sense, you're interacting with the machine. You're performing actions, it's performing actions. Some sequences of actions are valid or possible. Some other sequences of actions are impossible or invalid. So we can think about the set of legal or possible actions as a kind of language in an abstract sense. So we've got three kinds of languages that we'll be talking about all of these to a greater or lesser extent in the course. And what's interesting is that although those three domains, those three kinds of languages, superficially appear to be quite different in many ways, what's interesting is that there are a lot of underlying theoretical concepts that are common to all of them. So there's some underlying theory such that when you understand these certain general theoretical concepts, they give you something which you can apply in different ways, both to the study of computer languages and to the study of human languages and to the study of behaviors of systems. So a few of these things will kind of ring bells from what you learned about in Informatics 1. So you know about finite state machines, I believe. Yeah. And you may have some idea already what regular languages are. Do you have some idea what regular languages are? So we'll be saying more about those kinds of things. Other things you probably won't have so much idea about yet are context-free languages and syntax trees associated with them. Say a bit more about those on the next slide, and a few other concepts. But the main point is that there's some general underlying theory that can be applied in lots of in all these three settings, and that's a rather remarkable fact. And what that suggests is that these underlying theoretical ideas are somehow in some way central or fundamental to the idea of general idea of information exchange or information processing. So there's an idea there that these ideas are sort of ubiquitous and that therefore they're worth learning about. They're worth investing the time learning about what these concepts are, because you can apply them in lots of different places. So we'll be looking both at the theoretical ideas themselves and at the applications of them. So the third kind of language, the one about the behaviour of systems, that will play a more a kind of minor role in the course. Most of it will be about formal languages, and that'll be mainly my lectures, and natural languages, which will be mainly Morella's lectures. And we'll see there's some important common ground between these. There's important similarities and bits of theory that can apply to both, and some important contrasts and differences between them. So we'll be highlighting some of those as well. Okay. So here's an example of a central concept, okay? And this will be a central concept in this course, but it's a central concept that's common to both programming languages and to human languages. And this is the concept that texts in the language, or phrases in the language, whether it's a programming language or human languages, have a kind of structure. They're not just undifferentiated streams of symbols, but even a little phrase in a program, like in Java, you might have an assignment statement which says x2 equals minus x1. So that's saying compute the value of minus x1 and assign that value to the variable that's called x2. Okay? So there are really three components to that phrase. There's x2, which is the variable you're trying to assign into, the equals, which says what you're wanting to do is actually assign into that, and then the minus x1 is kind of grouped together, because that's the expression whose value you're going to want to assign into x1. So into x2. So intuitively, the point is here that the minus and the x1 are kind of belong together as part of the same expression, in a way in which the equals and the minus don't belong together. Okay, so you'd naturally read this as x2 equals minus x1. Not as x2 equals minus x1, right? That would intuitively be kind of odd or wrong. So there's the point is here that even this simple program phrase has a kind of hierarchical structure, in that some bits of the phrase are grouped together into units, which are then grouped together in larger units. And this tree structure here, which shows that the expression overall is a command, which is broken down into a variable, an assignment operator, and an expression. And the expression itself is broken down into a minus sign and a variable, and the variable is, in this case, is x1. That's a kind of structure that's kind of implicit there in the program phrase you've written. So one of the things a computer needs to do, one of the things a compiler needs to do in order to be able to compile your program, is to take the text that you've written, which is just x2 equals minus x1, and to recover from that the tree structure, okay? Because determining the structure of a phrase is an important first step towards being able to do anything else to it, like being able to actually execute this command or anything like that. Now we can see an exactly parallel thing going on on the natural language side. So even a simple English sentence like "the sun shone," I mean, it's intuitively obvious that the words "the sun" are kind of grouped together in a single unit, a single noun phrase, in fact. That's what NP means. And the sun, as a unit, serves as the subject of this sentence. So you'd say "the sun shone." You wouldn't naturally group the sentence together as "the sun shone." Okay, that would be just kind of odd in some ways. So it's crucial to the structure of natural languages that phrases and sentences can be organized into a hierarchical structure, which can be represented by a tree here. So here we've got S stands for sentence. So we've got the whole thing is a sentence, which consists of a noun phrase and a verb phrase. The noun phrase consists of a determiner, which is a fancy name for a word like the, and a noun, which in this case is sun, and the verb phrase consists of just the verb shone, okay? This is just to give you a rough idea of what we're going to be talking about. Don't worry if you don't completely understand all the details here. This is we'll be going into much more detail on this. But the basic idea is that phrases in both formal and natural languages have a hierarchical structure which can be represented by trees. And if you want to do language processing, one of the first things you need to be able to do is to learn how to compute what the syntax tree is for a given phrase. It's now 5 o'clock, so I'll just put the next slide there to show you how exciting it looks. I'll stop there and look forward to seeing you again on Thursday. Okay. If the class reps could come, the class rep volunteers could come forward, I'll. Hi. Would you be able to put. Hiya. Yeah. Okay. See you. Cheers. Hiya. How you doing?
Good. Great. Will you be meeting me?
Not right now. I don't. I've just got to work out how to put this technology to bed. But. Okay, leave it on.
Right, I need to.
It's down at the bottom left. You click on the little thing at the bottom left, and you'll see log off is an option.
Okay, I'll try it. I'll get you.
Yes. Hello. Oh. Yeah, I'm going to get back there. I'm going to read it.